and good day, eh? Welcome to the Super Good Camping Podcast. My name is Pamela.
I'm Tim.
And we are from supergoodcamping.com. We are here because we're on a mission to inspire other families to enjoy camping adventures, such as we have with our kids. Today's guest is a social media content creator. He loves exploring the outdoors, is pretty much in any form, canoeing, hiking, in the snow, sometimes solo, sometimes with pals, always epic. Please welcome Ben Beauchamp. Welcome, Ben.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for coming out.
Yeah, I'm fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Awesome. Well, we're just commenting beforehand that we have some blue sky here in Toronto, which is amazing. Yes. In the middle of winter.
But yeah, it is. I keep looking out the window like, it's blue sky. The sun is out. Are you kidding me?
Hopefully by the time
so little of it this winter.
By the time this airs, we'll all be nicely sun-kissed and very, very full of vitamin D.
There you go. And hopefully some of us, you, are out getting eaten alive by bugs.
Yeah. You have plans to be eaten alive by bugs in the next little while?
I do. I always have plans to get eaten by. That's one of my favorite hobbies.
What are your upcoming trips?
So I'm actually going to be, my February is looking a little too busy just with some life stuff and then the outdoor adventure show. So I don't have anything. I completely lied. The week before the outdoor adventure show, I was just building my calendar earlier yesterday, and I was kind of just roughly getting together some tripping ideas. But the mid February, so I think the week before the adventure show, my brother and I are going to try and get out and do some winter camping, which will be a lot of fun because I love my brother, but This will be his first time ever camping in the winter. So I'm going to actually lend him my hot tent. I just have a one-man hot tent. And he'll stay nice and toasty in there. And I'm going to sleep under a tarp next to a campfire, kind of next to him there. We haven't really decided on a location, but we're super pumped. We're probably going to try to center the trip around ice fishing. We're both like crazy into fishing, of course. So I don't know where we're going to go. It would be really cool to get into some trout through the ice, but that's kind of up in the air, but that will be my next trip for sure.
Cool. Are you going to go out? Sorry, I didn't catch how long you're going to go for. Just like a weekend or?
Yeah, we're looking at family day weekend. So hopefully I'm pretty flexible with my schedule, but he works, he's in HVAC. So he's like working a ton of hours all through the week, but he's hoping to get the Friday off. And then with family day weekend, the Monday, he should have off too. So hoping for like a 4-day trip. And then the day after family day, unrelated, is actually my birthday. So it'll be sweet. Nice. Like, I think we'll do that trip and then come home and have a night. Like, you know, that first meal back after a camping trip, that'll be my birthday dinner. So
excellent. That's a good one. Yeah.
Big juicy steak.
That's exactly.
So Thomas, our eldest and I, when we go, we make a point of stopping at somewhere, doesn't matter.
Yeah,
and just eat some big juicy dripping with grease burger. And yeah
this was one of my first like major canoe trips back when I was much younger. I think this was, I may have been 13 or 14. We did a father-son trip with myself, my dad, and then two other father-son duos. And we did Killarney, and it was like, it was an epic trip. But on the way back, it was just like the craziest storm. It felt like we were in like some shipwreck movie, right? And like we'd see lightning, pull off the shore, get drenched. It would clear up a little bit. We'd paddle a little bit longer, and there's more lightning, and we'd have to pull off. It was just like that kind of day. And that was like still to this date, probably like one of the longest, like most exhausting paddles ever. We didn't hit the shore until like 9 p.m. that night. Got on the road, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with is it the French River Trading Post with the Hungry Bear?
So Thomas and I have been there when we did our French River.
Oh, nice!
That was awesome.
I would love to know how good that food tastes, because it was closed when we came through. We were like talking about it for 4 days straight, going like, "Oh, the ribs at the Hungry Bear, like it's gonna be so good." And when we passed through, it was like completely closed. So, like, mind you, it was 10 or 11 at night at that point. But we were so hungry. We ended up stopping in Parry Sound for McDonald's or something. Ordered like three meals each and cleaned up. It was like 2 a.m. at that point.
That's poopy, man.
Oh yeah, yeah. But my friends and I still talk about those memories. It's like looking back there, it's always so funny, right?
I'm sure we've eaten at that same McDonald's on.
Oh yeah,
on return trips and camping trips before.
That's probably
Anyone with a canoe has.
there's a good tweak in my tiny brain. How did you get into camping stuff? Have you always done it? Is it your parents did it and dragged you out? How did that play?
Yeah. So, I've always been like super into the outdoors, just ever since I was a little kid. My family, like both sides of my family, mom and dad, they come from very adventurous families. They always camped as kids and, I think both my parents as kids did like cross country road trips, whether it was like east to like Vancouver or west to like the East Coast. Or sorry, I got that backwards. Either way. You gotta go a long way to go east to Vancouver. they do like East Coast, West Coast trips, and they would always camp along the way as a family, right? Like rather than stay in a hotel, you go set up at a campground for a fraction of the price, and it's so much more fun that way, in my opinion. And so that was kind of the way that we were raised. We're just always camping as a family. We do these annual trips to Awenda Provincial Park. Have you guys ever been there? Yeah.
Nope.
Oh, no.
I've read a lot about it.
Yeah, beautiful spot. I haven't been there in forever, but would highly recommend it just for like a car camping weekend. The beaches are stunning. It's like right on Georgian Bay, so you can't go wrong. But we do that kind of stuff. And my dad's from Northern Ontario. He's from way up in Kapuskasing, north of Timmins. And so that's where my grandparents lived when I was growing up. So we would always do like 2 weeks in the winter around Christmas time, and then 2 weeks in the summer for like a big fishing trip. And so like my idea of going to visit my grandparents was just like always playing out in the bush. Like we'd go up there, and if we were there for 14 days, like 10 of them would be on some dirt road, like just whether it was like fishing or we didn't do too much hunting until I was like early teens. And then I never really did again. It just didn't have the opportunity, but just always being out in the bush. And that was very much like the norm for me. I always had so much fun with it and I loved it so much, but it wasn't, I don't remember being like crazy about it until I stopped doing it so much. And like when we got to high school and kind of life started getting a little busier, we started doing like less camping as a family. I missed it so much. And I was like, okay, like I need to get back into this. Like, and so then I didn't camp it from like maybe age 18 to like 21. And I just kind of got away from it. And my cousin who, he actually lives out in BC now, like living the dream. He's sending me all these photos of like skiing in the Powder, and he's in Canmore. Or no, nice. That's he moved
Alberta.
I can't remember where it is in BC. He's gonna kill me for this, but he lived in Canmore, Alberta. but then Cranbrook, that's where he is in BC now. So beautiful area anywhere you are out there. But he was bugging me for like three summers saying like, we got to go camping. Like he hiked a lot of the Bruce Trail and, they live in Orillia. So, pretty much easy access to so much good camping area, just like within an hour of Orillia. And, he was bugging me. And I always wanted to, there was never a reason that I didn't go with him. I was just like working in the summers, and then I got busy, and then there was pandemic and all this kind of stuff. Then we finally got out, and we did a 3 day hike in Queen Elizabeth Wildlands. And it was like just life changing for me. It was, I just like a switch flicked in my brain, and I was like, wow, like why did I stop doing this? And I all the credit to him for finally like dragging me out there. And we had so much fun. And then I did a trip with my brother after that. And then I did a solo trip. And then I filmed that solo trip. I just wanted to kind of capture like the experience, and then decided to share it on YouTube. And I never looked back. I just, every camping trip I've done, I just kept filming it and sharing it. And I'm always trying to get better and better with like how I share the story. And basically everything I do now revolves around camping. Like how can I make this next camping trip happen? Like how can I make enough money to cover my rent and food just so I can go camping for a week at the end of the month? Right. So
yep.
It's, and I love it so much. It's really kind of, given me a sense of purpose and, like this might sound too dramatic, but like, it's a reason to get up in the morning. It's like, okay, like I want to be healthy. I want to be in my best shape so that I can continue doing this for a very long time. Right.
That's nice.
One other content creators have said sometimes that they felt that always filming and always trying to capture things took away a little bit from their experience of the actual adventure of the camping. Do you find that as well? Or do you kind of step away sometimes and just enjoy the experience? And then other times you're about the filming.
You know what? I want to talk about both sides of that, because firstly, I'll say I love like the filmmaking aspect of it. I love videography so much. And that's always been something that I've loved just as much as the outdoors. Always like making little videos in my backyard when I was like 8 years old, even. I would, my childhood home backed onto a like series of like six cornfields. So big, big cornfields. And, there was in between the fields, there were like these little like forested areas. And so we would always like build forts in there. And like that was always kind of our like that felt like that may as well have been as wild as Wabakimi or something to me at that time. Right. Like we felt like we were in the backcountry. And meanwhile, like there was like a highway like 100 feet away. There was a hill there. And so we were always snowboarding back there. And just no matter what we were doing back there, I was always filming it. And I would always like make these little edits to music and stuff. And so that videography aspect has always been with me. And then I went to school for it. We were talking a little bit before this about Humber. I went to like a media program in school. And that was like kind of a multifaceted program with all aspects of media, with like video photography, graphic design, web design. There was a little bit of marketing in there, which were all useful tools in what I do now. But video has always been like my main thing. And it's always been a big passion of mine. So when I go out on these trips, it is very fulfilling for me to be filming and creating and like that. I always find that it'll take a day or two, but I always enter this like flow state of creation. And I just like totally get in the zone. Even it doesn't matter if it's like a weekend trip or a 2 week long trip. I like just feel like that's when I'm most focused. And it's kind of like when I'm filming out there, it's like everything I'm shooting is like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so good. Like, but I will say that's huge, especially when I'm doing these solo trips, because it's something for me to do. Like there's anyone that camps, especially like backcountry camping, there is a lot of work that goes into the day, like getting food ready and setting your tent up, or if you're moving camps. And I find when I'm solo camping, like if I'm not dragging my butt that day and I get all that done, it's almost like, okay, what? Not, I shouldn't say like what now, because there's still a lot, like lots you can do to stay entertained. But I just find I love putting my time into this video creation. But looking at the other side of that, when I'm with other people, whether it be like a trip with my girlfriend, or I've done a trip with my brother, or this doesn't really apply to other content creators because they're in the same video creation mode. It does get in the way when I'm with my girlfriend, especially like. And she's super cool with me like creating and filming everything, but that's when I mostly want to just like, I just want to like relax. I just want to like spend time with my loved ones. And that's when I do just want to enjoy my time camping. So I wouldn't say that it takes away from the experience. But I did a trip this past summer with my girlfriend where I didn't bring the camera at all. And that was, it was fantastic. And I think that's where you need to find that balance. So I do like set time aside to just focus on hanging out rather than worrying about the video. But it is nice afterwards too, to look back on the experience. It's so cool. Like my brother and I did Killarney in 2022, and like whenever we get together, like we still throw that video on just to relive the trip, right? So much fun. But I don't know. I think there's definitely a balance, but for solo trips, I love the creation side. That's all I want to say. I don't want to ramble on too much about this, but I do love the video, and I think that is part of the experience rather than taking away from it.
Cool. Well, I hear you about having those memories, like, you know, anybody that goes to our YouTube channel, I've only got a half a dozen, maybe, videos of, you know, us wherever doing whatever. I have dozens. I've got a massive hard drive that's just chock full of it. I watch them once in a while. I'm also lazy. I don't want to edit them, but I've got those. Like, I can go back and look and see when, you know, our kids were much, much shorter and, you know, missing their two front teeth and stuff like that while we were out camping at wherever. So yeah. It's cool stuff. Question for you. In the creation of your content, I've heard something. I don't know for sure, but I think it's something that has happened very seldom. So flying a drone over Ontario Provincial Parks is a no-no unless you have permission from the park superintendent. Literally, you're the only person I've ever heard of that got that permission. Yeah. How the heck did you do that? I may edit this out. I may not share this secret with anybody else. I may keep it just for myself.
If I tell you, I will have to kill you.
Exactly.
So I've done that twice now. The first one was at Nagagamasis Provincial Park, which is way, way up north. That's kind of between Hearst and Long Lac. So that's
way, way up north.
Oh yes. Yeah. So my dad, like I said, is from Kapuskasing. So he's got a buddy that has a cabin out there, that my dad has been going to since high school. And, so that's, where we've gone to, I don't know if you saw my, the video where I had that super blue water.
Yes.
And then, so in, we did, 10 days or 14 days up at that cabin. And while we were there, I did a 4-day trip, and then I came back to the cabin, and then another 4-day trip. My dad dropped me off in the woods, right? So before that, I reached out to, so that's on, the cabin is on Nagagamasis Lake, which is part of Nagagamasis Provincial Park. And I had actually wanted to paddle into like a little section of the park to film a trip, but unfortunately, I never even got to, because the water was like, the ice had just come off, and the water was like super high. And the section that I wanted to paddle was like, whatever, like class 4 rapids. And I just couldn't even get the canoe in there. It was like too intense. Beforehand, this is so nice. Like, just such a wholesome moment. I remember I emailed the park just saying like, hey, is there any chance I can get in contact with the superintendent? I would love to fly the drone, and proposed a deal to them that if they gave me permission to fly it, that they could have the footage. They could like put it on their website if they want, and like no money involved. They could just like one for one trade. And I got an email back. I can't remember exactly how it went, but I think he emailed me back just saying like, I'm sorry, there's not really much I can do. Like, you would need like a permit. I told him, that's what it was. I told him that I wanted to go into these certain lakes. Where it was, there was a road that, washes out every springtime or every other spring. And, just the way that the creek runs through the culvert, it's just like such a susceptible area. And, I remember he emailed me back saying like, I'd love to give you permission, but there's a little bit of a process that we have to go through, and that lake that you want to go to, that there's no way you're getting in there. And so I emailed him back saying like, oh, I'd be interested to hear like the process, like whatever we can do. I want this to be like a win for both parties. And we also have like ATVs. So we're going to be staying at a cabin on Nagagamasis Lake. I basically explained to him that like, I'm familiar with the area. And he called me right after. I said, like, please call me if you want to hear any details. He's like, oh, you should have said you had ATVs. Like, you're getting in there. Like, you'll be fine. And it was almost like he was like a little bit concerned that I was just like some random dude just wanting to come up and like just explore like this super remote wilderness. And really, really nice guy over the phone. And he actually sent me like the official, there's a, oh man, I can't remember the term for it, but it's basically like a permit that like gives me access to fly my aircraft in within the park boundary. So this would be, I assume, what would be similar to if you wanted to land a float plane, like in one of the lakes parks, or sorry, the park's lakes. Right, and yeah. It was, so I did that, and he actually wanted footage of this certain waterfall that was in the area. He said, like, I haven't been in there in forever, and if you could, I'll give you permission as long as you send me this footage of this waterfall. So I did that, and then I filmed my camping video, and I sent it all to him. And then he got back to me like about a week later saying, awesome footage, thank you so much. I've sent your video to the Ontario Parks Superintendent group chat. So he said, if you ever need to reach out to any other parks, there's a good chance they'll be familiar with your name. And when I saw that, I was like freaking out. I was going like, come on, you didn't have to do that. And I was awesome. I'm still like to this day, still like I consider myself to be starting out. Like I'm a beginner at all of this. But I was so fresh and like, I'm just like trying to network, trying to get my name out there. And this guy's like sending me out to like all of the parks. And so I was like totally freaking out over that. So I'd actually reached it. So fast forward about a month and a half, I was had this Temagami trip planned, and I reached out to the Temagami, like there's kind of complicated how Temagami works, but there's like a cluster of all these different parks, but I think they were all run by this same superintendent. And I emailed him and totally name dropped the guy from Nagagamasis. And I said, hey, like so-and-so may have shared this video with you, blah, blah, blah. And so I emailed him and he called me. He's like, oh, no way. You talked to Dave? Like, I love Dave. Great guy. And so it was like kind of like I was so nervous about like talking like these are like big names, like superintendents of these big parks. But when they called me, it just felt so human and so wholesome. Like they were just like, oh yeah, Dave sent you over here. And so I was able to say same deal. So I got, had to like fill out this form for their marketing team saying that I'm a videographer coming into the park with my aircraft and, they can have all rights to the footage. So, so I sent it to, the superintendent in Temagami, and, I don't know if they're ever going to use it. I haven't seen anything, but they have full rights to that footage, which that deal at the time still made sense to do. But I'm like totally waiting to see like my footage in Ontario Parks commercial. And I wouldn't have any credit. They wouldn't even have to name drop me. So, which would kind of suck, but it was worth it at the time. But at the end of the day, I'm super grateful for all of that because at least I have those connections now. It's just nice, even if it's not this summer or next summer, or maybe it's not even from 5 years from now, at least I can be a familiar face to them if I ever want to try and like collab with Ontario Parks. Or if they, like, I just feel like that's more possible now. So I talked a little bit about this on Canoe Hounds, but I wanted to make it clear that I don't know if they like pulled strings for me or if that's like standard protocol. I wouldn't like recommend that to people, but what I will recommend is that, if you want to try and do something, like all you got to do is ask, like, just like reach out to people. I think that doesn't hurt. And the worst they can say is no. So I think that's, there's something to be said about just like, see what you can do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. It's funny because it wasn't until after I'd heard you'd got permission that I went back and reread the Ontario Parks. I'm a bit of a nut, and I do stuff like read the rules and that sort of jazz and see what the updates are, right?
Yeah.
So the way that it's worded, it's very put offish. Like it's like they're trying to keep you from bugging them.
Yep.
Don't bring the drone. Don't ask us. We're going to make life difficult, and you're going to hear no in the end anyhow.
Yeah.
So I totally get it because they'd be just inundated if somebody went, hey, it's really easy to do and no problems. Like, oh, okay. There'd be just drones everywhere, which would make everybody insane as well, yeah. All that buzzing and stuff.
And that's not even like my goal has always been to promote the outdoors and I want to share the camping experience. I definitely do not want to like promote drone usage or anything. That's just kind of a tool that I use to give perspective of the area that I'm in. But you're right. Like could you imagine like some of those like main corridors in Algonquin, or there's like 500 people on a campsite or on a lake, and they're just, everyone has a drone going around.
It's everywhere. Yeah. No, there's plenty of drone footage of Ontario parks out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to use a word that's, I'm not going to have to edit out. they're goofs about it. You know what I mean? Like they're right there. They're over top of other people that are paddling through. It's like, and you know that they didn't ask them if that was cool and stuff. It's like, come on, man. People are trying to be outside, enjoying nature. Just bugger off.
And as chill as the superintendents were with me, both of them in both cases were very, very clear with me with like the conditions that I had to follow. Like you only film your own campsite, only like film your own area. Do not harass wildlife. Do not go near anyone else that you see in the bush. And like it was like a contract that I had to sign. I could have, like, if I broke any of those rules, there were big charges.
I'm sure there were. And the fact that you're in fairly remote areas, like even much as everybody has heard of Temagami, there's not a lot of traffic through there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you would be interfering in other people's trips much less regardless of what you did. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, again, like I would be so upset if I was just sitting at a campsite and a freaking drone comes down. Like, imagine that. Yeah. They'll just start throwing rocks and sticks at it.
I know how much that drone cost.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully you got the warranty.
Yeah. How do you like me now? Cool. Well, and I'm glad you did. And I hope everybody listening is getting the fact that it's to show the beauty of the things, not to be making people or animals crazy. All right. Mm-hmm. Just saying, just let's put that disclaimer in there. I want to circle back. You were talking about fishing. Tell us a fishing story. Just pull one out of your butt.
Oh my goodness.
Tell me one of the coolest fishing stories you've ever had.
Oh, okay.
Well, I've seen photographic evidence of you with a massive pike on Spanish River trip with self.
Yes.
That was a huge fish. My goodness.
You know, I'm thinking here because I'm not trying to find a fishing story. I'm trying to decide which of the hundreds I want to tell. but that pike on the Spanish River was like a crazy one. That was with Tosh Self-Propelled, who I did that trip with. Who's also a fellow YouTuber for those of you who don't know, but probably everyone has heard of him at this point. That day, like we were sitting next to the campfire, just chatting away, going like, what did we do to deserve a day like that? We had like spent the entire morning running these beautiful rapids and there was like no slip ups at all. Like we were just cruising through like perfectly through the rapids. And then at the end of the day, we decided to do some fishing, and like instantly I think I caught like two or three bass. I got a walleye. And then he was paddling. We had gotten to this lake that we were going to camp at that night. And he was like way, way up ahead of me, like probably like 500 yards ahead. And it was like dead silent glass lake. And the sun was just starting to set. And I could hear his drag going like that far away. He was just like reeling in something crazy. And I could tell that he was paddling like ahead of me, like straight. And then I could hear his drag and his canoe did this. And I could tell that he was like reeling in something that was like pulling him around. And so as I like pulled up, like probably maybe like 250 yards away from him, I yelled to him. I was like, "Hey, like, was that a big fish?" And all I hear, he goes, "It was effing huge." He had this huge bass. So then we get to the campsite. It's this gorgeous spot, and we're all excited. Like, we've got this fish dinner. We had two bass. One of them was his massive one. And then we had a nice walleye, and we were cleaning them up. And just like chatting away about how magnificent that day was. And I was cleaning these fish like right on the shoreline. And as I was cleaning them, I was throwing the guts in the water. And there was like a little weed bed right off the rock that we were camped on. And I was like kind of tossing them into the weed bed. And all of a sudden, as I'm like cleaning these fish, there was like a huge swirl in the water. And then a big splash. And I like started freaking out. It scared me. And turns out I knew it instantly. It was a big pike that was like eating all these guts that I was throwing in the water. And I want to clarify, I don't think that chumming the water is legal in Canada, but I wasn't like intentionally chumming. I was just tossing the guts. I wanted them away from the campsite. And, but as soon as I saw that, I grabbed my rod and tossed it in, and, instantly the pike took it and just dragged my line out like 100 feet. And, like there's like the footage is all on YouTube from my Spanish river trip, but you could see like Tosh running to me with his camera. The footage is all janky. He's like, and I'm just like giggling like a little girl, like reeling this thing in, and finally we got it up. And it was just huge. And like, again, we were just so like baffled by the fact that like we had already had this amazing fishing day. We already had fish to eat. We did not deserve this. It was just such a cherry on top of the day. And then it ended up like being one of the most beautiful nights. We woke up the next morning and it was actually a storm was rolling in, but right before it was like the sky was super dark, but the sun was shining through, and it was just this like golden contrast on like a super dark sky, and it was peak fall colors. Like that 48 hours was like some of my best like all summer. It was just so much fun. Like I still can't get over that huge pike. And like this summer, so I fished my entire life. Like I think I caught my first fish when I was 3 years old. That was another thing that we talked a little bit about on Canoe Hound. And then from then on, like I said, we did 2 weeks every summer up in Northern Ontario, and that's like world-class walleye fishing up there. And so I was always spoiled with fishing as a little kid, and always like just obsessed with it. And I remember actually, I don't actually remember this happening, but my dad was telling me that when I was about 6 or 7 years old, it was like January or February, and I was in the basement and I came upstairs crying, and my dad's like, "Oh, what's wrong? What's wrong?" And I was like all teary eyed going, "I don't know if I like fishing anymore." And he was like, "What? Where did this come? It's February. You don't have to love fishing right now." And I just like got all like worked up because I wasn't like craving fishing at that time. And I was always like just so crazy about it. I don't know where that came from. but then like this past year, I just spent so much like, I had a total shift where all of my time, like I said, everything was going into camping, and a big part of my camping experiences is always fishing. I very often will base my trips around fishing and where the best fishing spots are and stuff. So this past year, I put more time into fishing than I ever have, and it totally paid off. Like this summer, I caught my first lake trout. I caught I had never done too much trout fishing, but this past summer I caught a bunch of brook trout when we were up north, which I had never caught before. I caught my first splake. I caught like my top 10 biggest pike ever. bunch of walleye. It just totally spoiled this past summer. And I don't know if I've gotten my fix yet. Like I said, in February, my brother and I are going ice fishing. But I just love it so much. Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, what's another good fishing story? I'll send you guys a video. I'm not quite sure if I want to share it to the public just yet. Maybe by the time that it's this podcast airs, maybe I'll share it. But we have footage of when I think I was like 7 or 8 years old, and my brother was, well, he would have been like 5 or 6 at the time. And we were fishing with my dad in this little boat that our friend had at their cottage. And we had caught we were just going for sunfish and like little perch and rock bass and stuff. And then he hooked into like a pretty nice smallmouth. And it's all on footage where he is reeling this thing in, and like my dad is like commentating, saying like, oh, I'm like, does it feel big, buddy? And he's like, yep. He's like, I think it's a big one. And then he pulls it in, and it was a decent sized smallmouth. Like it was like, we figured it was like 15 inches. And as he pulled it over, we all like had our reactions. And I for whatever reason, I always comment on like the size of the fish. And I was like, oh, I think that's a 15 incher. And my dad was like, good job, buddy. And my brother had his reaction. And then, so I created this video where fast forward like 10 years, we were in our boat out on Lake Simcoe, and my brother hooked into a 5-pound smallmouth. This is like, for people that don't smallmouth fish, so that's a lunker. And I did a comparison video where when he caught this little fish when he was a little kid, and then fast forward to when we were teenagers and he caught this 5-pounder, all of our reactions were bang on. They never changed. I was like, oh, it's a 5-pounder. And my dad was like, good job, buddy. Like, it was the exact same. So that's on an old YouTube channel that I think I've got 100 subscribers on that I had in high school. I'll send you guys the video, and I'll share it to the public at some point. That was a pretty cool video that just kind of captures the essence of our, like, I would love to say too that the fishing is also like a huge thing for family time too. Like that's one thing that like I spend a ton of time with my brother and my dad in the boat, and my mom too. Like she loves, like she's not as big into the fishing, but she loves the family time. We would like when I would go fishing with my dad, it would start off like we'd just be chatting away in the boat or whatever, and then we'd start telling old stories and stuff. And then like a lot of times it would be like a Tuesday night, we'd be out on Lake Simcoe, and it would turn into like a full blown therapy session. And like, that's when we would like most connect. Right. And, it's funny, like it got to the point where, like if in high school, like if I would be going through something, maybe I'm feeling down or whatever, feeling stressed out. And like my mom would be trying to like help me out and just say like, hey, like what's going on, buddy? Like, is everything okay? And like, yeah, fine, I'm fine, whatever. And then it gets to the point where she would just say to my dad, okay, like something's bugging him, you got to take him fishing. And then like we'd go fishing and everything would be okay. And it was just like, what happens in the boat stays in the boat. So I can't tell you what we talked about, but that's a big portion of it is the family time too. And that's something I would love to pass on to my kids too, as well. Like, I think that's also camping as well. You guys camp as a family, you know what it is.
Yeah. Well, that's, I have to agree. That's some of the coolest times is that all four of us jump in the boat up at the cottage or whatever, mm-hmm. and bug out at, you know, crack of dawn, spend an hour and a half catching diddly squats. But hanging out, it's, you know, it's nice, it's quiet, it's back home for a breakfast, you know, it's
that and sitting around the campfire at the end of the day just like watching the fire,
you know, that it's actually, I saw it somewhere, I gotta look it up again, but there's like scientific studies about how campfires, like sitting around a campfire, like I don't know exactly what percentage it is, but it's like you're like 50% more likely to have a deeper conversation around a campfire. There's something psychological about it, which totally makes sense to me. Like, I feel like sitting around a campfire, it doesn't matter if it's with friends or family or whatever, like the conversation gets pretty wild.
Yeah. Well, and you're all sort of sharing an experience regardless of whether again, it's at the cottage, front mm-hmm. country, back country. It doesn't really matter. It's in your backyard, whatever.
Yeah.
It's the communing with nature thing.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That's it for us for today. Thank you so much to our special guest, Ben Beauchamp, for joining us. Please do check him out. Check out his YouTube channel. He's Ben Beauchamp, which is Ben, B-E-A-U-C-H-A-M-P, for the non-French speakers, Ben Beauchamp. And also on Instagram, he's got some awesome pictures. Check out the white phase gray wolf on Instagram. It's a pretty cool picture. And we will talk to you again soon. I'm Pamela.
I'm Tim.
And we are from supergoodcamping.com. You can reach out to us anytime at hi@supergoodcamping.com. We would love to hear feedback one way or the other. If there's something we could be doing better, if there's something that you love, we'd love to hear either way. And also check us out on all the social. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and we have a YouTube channel. We'd love it if you subscribed. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
Bye.